It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time. And joining us, as always, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
Ben, let's talk about deeds in the state of North Carolina. A deed of conveyance. Lots of questions concerning deeds. And right out of the gate, one of the questions that we get so very often is, you know, Mr. Collins, Mr. Harvell, what is a quitclaim deed?
Mm-hmm. People have heard that term.
People hear that term.
I also think you're saying quick.
That's right.
They do.
Yeah.
And we aren't. We're saying Q-U-I-T, mm-hmm. quit
right.
claim deed. And basically, a quit claim deed, as opposed to a warranty deed, is a deed where a giver, if you will, many times called the grantor, just simply is deeding to the grantee whatever interest they happen to have in the land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first of all, we ought to say that a deed, any kind of deed, is a conveyance of land.
Okay.
a quitclaim deed is not an appropriate term to use for the conveyance of a boat,
right.
or, you know, a automobile or money or anything or a stock or a bond. There are transfer documents for all of those kinds of things, but they're not called deeds.
Okay.
A deed by nature would be the transfer of land. And sometimes a buyer, when a buyer is buying property and paying money for the property, they're going to want the seller to warrant the property, that they have title, that they have no lien against the property, that is the seller.
Right.
And that they are conveying to the buyer, who is paying good money for the property, that they are conveying, if you will, good and free and clear title. This is a warranty deed, which is to be contrasted to a quitclaim deed, whereby the seller in a quitclaim deed is basically saying, look, whatever I have, I'm deeding to you.
Right.
But I'm not giving you any kind of warranty. I'm not telling you necessarily, you know, what the boundaries to the property are, what the condition of the property is, whether or not I have owned the property for, you know, X number of years. I just simply am giving you whatever I happen to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is known as a quitclaim deed.
Now, that may mean that the title may be cloudy still, right?
It could mean that. It could mean that. But it doesn't have to mean that.
Right.
Many quitclaim deeds are good title,
mm-hmm.
Is being conveyed. It's just that due to the circumstances, the seller is not necessarily warranting the title. Now, a part of this is that Wes and I get the question, well, you know, Mr. Harvell, I have my deed to my land.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. But my wife and I built our house. And I never got a deed for my house.
Right.
So how do I get a deed for my house? And of course, this is a pretty common question. And I'll let Wes answer the question. There you go, Wes.
Yeah. What was the question?
Back to law school. Why don't I have a deed for my house?
Yeah, I'm with you. So, you know, basically, you know, folks are used to just holding that paper. I've got to have my deed. Where's my deed? You know, I don't know where my deed is. I lost my deed, you know, and it's because they're used to, you know, holding cash and that shows value, or holding stock and that shows value. But, you know, you don't always have the deed in hand. That doesn't mean that the property hasn't conveyed. Like, for example, if someone has passed away and they leave their property to someone by their will or through intestacy, well, you don't usually have a deed at that point in time. When you go search title on that respective property, what you do is obviously you connect the chain of title by saying that, okay, Miss Smith owned the property, and this is the connected chain of title to her, and then she died, and then she had a will, and under that will, it left the property to her son, Billy, whomever it may be. You don't have to have a deed. Now, in our office, in most cases, you know, we like to put a deed on record, when we're dealing with an estate under those type circumstances, because it just makes for a cleaner.
Makes it clean.
It makes it for a cleaner title search in 100 years.
Right.
You know, or even now. So, I mean, you've got that type of situation, you know, but when you go buy property, then obviously, you know, you are going to get that deed.
Yeah.
And when you go buy a property, you're going to see that it's not going to be a quick claim deed normally, because, you know, the quick claim deed, just like Cecil said, is just a conveyance of, you know, whatever you may have.
Yeah.
Now you're going to get a title search on this, you know, when you get the property. Or if you don't, let's say your friend says, I'll deed this property to you and gives you a quick claim deed and you don't do the title search. You pay me $10,000 for the property and we're good to go. Well, you don't have any guarantee that the guy who gave you the deed owned anything.
He even owns it, yeah.
Right, unless you had a title search done and get some confirmation there. And then you really wouldn't have a claim against them unless you had, you know, a contract and maybe a breach of contract claim. Then, but when you buy a property, you know, in a formal closing, you are going to have that general warranty deed that basically says that I warrant that I have good title to the property and can convey it to you. And in the event I can't, then I'll defend, you know, those claims. And that would be any kind of claim. Now, that doesn't mean that the property, you know, may not have a mortgage on it. It could have a mortgage.
Right.
But you would know that through the title search, and there might be an exception, you know, even in the deed. But the person does have the right to convey. They have good title. And the other kind of deed that we don't see that often is called a special warranty deed. Hmm. And basically what that is, you know, as contrasted to a general warranty deed, which would be, you know, covering any type of problems with title, I'll defend against those. A special warranty deed only relates to claims relative to the title based on actions or omissions of the grantor, you know. Mm-hmm. So let's say that these are kind of come out of the old Blackacre cases from law school from years and years ago. I mean, let's say that the grantor, the guy who is conveying the property to you, already conveyed it to somebody else,
uh-huh,
but he's warranting that I have good title, so I'm going to convey it to you. Well, that's an action of that grantor. And if he knows he's done that, that may create a cloud on title.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're in a situation where he would be liable under that special warranty because it was one of his actions that affected your title.
Yeah.
So lots of moving parts with regard to that. But I would say where, Cecil, maybe you can chime in on this, with your opinion on it. I would say that where this comes up more often than not, you know, folks just ask the general question, you know, I want to go ahead and deed my property to my kids,
yeah,
you know, and sometimes we get the question, well, I deeded the property to my kids, and it's really a conveyance to the kids. The deed is just how you do it,
yeah,
but that's what the terminology that folks use. And, you know, I don't know about my son's wife. Now, you know, I deeded that property to my son, and I don't know about her. I mean, she might have some spending problems, and I don't want to lose my property. And now what am I? Okay, I want to go ahead and take that back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's work that way.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's a great topic. And I think we can move with that topic a little bit today and then continue on with this next week, Ben, because there's a lot to be said about, quote, deeds.
Mm-hmm.
Just back to a couple of things real quick. Any improvement that you make to the property, like if you put in a nice fence, you do an in-ground pool, you build an outbuilding, a nice big garage, mm-hmm, to store your boat, cars, etc. Any improvement that you make to your property follows the deed, if you will. Okay. In the deed, it's known as an appurtenance or improvement thereto. Okay. Mm-hmm. Big legal word, but basically, bingo, there's your house. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's an appurtenance or improvement thereto. All right. another thing that, is interesting here to talk about, for a minute is that there's confusion about once you deed property to someone, like a child, for instance, does that property then vest in that grantee's spouse?
Right.
And the answer to that question is that it does not vest in them, because you only put John Doe on the deed and John is married to Mary. But if John then goes to convey the property,
right,
Mary is going to have a marital interest in that property and is going to need to join in the deed for the limited purpose of her spousal rights in the property. There's a whole body of law on this, joinder of a spouse, and that is absolutely the case in North Carolina. So this can get very cumbersome when you deed your property to 2, 3, 4, even 4 children or more.
Right, right.
You have to realize that in order to change the title to that property, it is likely going to need the signature of the spouses of those children.
Now, let me ask you a question on that point. If I say I deed a piece of a house to my married son, and do they now own it together, or do they? How is that owned? How is it?
He owns it.
He owns it.
He owns it. So, but he can't convey title
without her,
joinder, because she has a a marital claim on
right.
that,
okay.
And also. Let's say they got divorced, that would be seen as separate property if it just stayed in his name because it was a gift from, a parent. It also, back to the issue I was talking about before, in the event that you're worried about, let's say, the wife, having credit card liability, something like that. Well,
right.
and if that credit card is just in her name and she's sued for that and there's a judgment against her, then if the property is just in your son's name, then it would not be subject to her claim.
Right.
And also, if that property were tenants by entirety, let's say that he decided to put it in both names, by entirety, it also would not be subject to her claims of liability. Correct. Tenants by entirety property would not be.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more here on Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins. And if you would like to join in, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And we were just talking during the break about how deeds come in different shapes and sizes.
Well,
go ahead.
One of the interesting concepts that we should begin to talk about is the recording of a deed.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Ben, all of our listeners are thinking to themselves, they're thinking, well, I have a deed and I know it is recorded. Book and page number, certain county, where the property
right.
is located, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, the deed needs to, if it's going to be recorded, let's record it in the county where the property
right.
is located.
Okay.
This is the common thing that sometimes we don't see. The property is located in Craven County, but for some reason the deed is recorded in Carteret County. We do run into situations
oh, really?
Like that.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Now, or property can be on the line and can be in both counties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Property can even be on the line and in two different states.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. So the deed would, in those files would need to be recorded in two different places. Now, North Carolina law does not, in order for a deed to be effective, to be valid, to be legal as between the two parties, it does not have to be recorded. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, really?
That's not what our listeners would expect to hear. The recording issue of the deed in the state of North Carolina has to do with notice to third parties. And so the point here is that the deed as between A and B is valid, but let's suppose that A also deeded the property to C. And so there are two deeds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a deed to the property to B. There's also a deed to the property to someone down the road who happens to be client C.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got a problem unless, for instance, the deed is recorded and it's going to be based on the first to record, which in North Carolina is known as a race statute. We have a race statute.
You race to the courthouse.
First to the courthouse to record the deed. Those are unusual cases, clearly. Yeah. I mean, how many people deed a property to one person and then turn around and deed it also to another person? But this doesn't happen so much intentionally as maybe unintentionally.
Right.
The description is a little bit vague. The description is inclusive of property that we thought was deeded previously, but we're not sure. It's usually a description issue that then can create these race statute issues. But we record, we sign many deeds in our office every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And clients many times then ask as they walk out the door, now, is that deed effective? Just like a will.
Right, right.
And the answer to the question is, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, the deed is legal. It is effective. You have, in fact, now conveyed your property. Then a week or so later, it may get recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Usually it is recorded in our office, but the effective date of the deed is back to the day that it was signed appropriately under notary.
Right.
That is the effective date of the deed. That's very, very different than necessarily the date of recording, which can be several days, a week, a month later, and in some files, if ever recorded.
If a deed is not recorded, does that create a tax issue down the line? I mean, the property taxes and things like that?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, the tax department picks up, you know, the ownership, you know, based on the deed.
Recorded.
You know, when you have a proper deed, it's going to have that PIN number on it so they can follow that and they can update their system so they know who to bill. So yeah, if you just have a deed that, you know, grandma conveyed to you and you put it in the drawer because that's what she told you to do. Well, the tax office isn't going to know about it. So the bill's still going to go to grandma.
Yeah.
But, the advice in almost every situation as far as that goes would be that let's get that thing recorded.
Right.
Because what if grandma gives a deed to somebody else?
Yeah.
You know,
she forgets.
It's pure race, and it doesn't matter what you know or whether you have notice about whether there was a previous deed or not. It's whoever gets that recorded first has superior title. So that's why, you know, when you do a real estate closing, you don't rely upon the title search that you did 3 or 4 weeks before in anticipation of the closing. You rely upon that, but you also update. Meaning before you record that deed, you look at the title to make sure nothing else got put on record, you know, so, you know, deed of trust or whatever, so that you're sure that the title is clear. You know, the other, another thing that I would mention would be that, if you have a gift deed, meaning a deed that's given without consideration.
Right.
North Carolina requires that to be recorded within 2 years of its execution. So you can't hold on to this grandma deed for in perpetuity either.
Right.
You know,
okay.
You've got to record that in order for it to have any
effect.
But
only if it's been a gift.
Only if it's a gift.
A gift deed, yep.
That's 2 years. The exception to the rule that a deed does not have to be recorded.
Okay.
Right. Generally.
But then sometimes you get into issues about was it a gift? Did you give consideration for it? Did you not give consideration for it? You know, did you pay anything for it? You know, and then there, you know, a deed doesn't always say gift deed on its face. It might say quitclaim deed, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a gift deed. It could be that there was, you know, money actually paid for it. Maybe it's not a gift deed. So that's the kind of stuff that sometimes, you know, I've had maybe a handful of cases before where the deeds have gotten old and for some reason that they haven't been recorded. And then we get into an issue whether it was a gift deed or not.
Right.
You know, it happens.
So. Okay. More to come in a moment here with Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins. And if you'd like to participate in the show, you can give us a call.
Yes. Give me a call at 800-818-2255. 247-7282 is the Morehead City area number. And 353-4674 is the Jacksonville number.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, attorneys at law, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins. And we were just talking during the break about how deeds come in different shapes and sizes.
Well,
go ahead.
One of the interesting concepts that we should begin to talk about is the recording of a deed.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Ben, all of our listeners are thinking to themselves, they're thinking, well, I have a deed and I know it is recorded. Book and page number, certain county where the property
right.
is located, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, the deed needs to, if it's going to be recorded, let's record it in the county where the property
right.
is located.
Okay.
This is the common thing that sometimes we don't see. The property is located in Craven County, but for some reason the deed is recorded in Carteret County. We do run into situations
oh, really?
Like that.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Now, or property can be on the line and can be in both counties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Property can even be on the line and in two different states.
That's true. Yep.
Okay. So the deed would in those files would need to be recorded in two different places. Now, North Carolina law does not, in order for a deed to be effective, to be valid, to be legal as between the two parties, it does not have to be recorded. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, really?
That's not what our listeners would expect to hear. The recording issue of the deed in the state of North Carolina has to do with notice to third parties. And so, the point here is that the deed as between A and B is valid, but let's suppose that A also deeded the property to C. And so there are two deeds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a deed to the property to B. There's also a deed to the property to someone down the road who happens to be client C.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got a problem unless, for instance, the deed is recorded and it's going to be based on the first to record, which in North Carolina is known as, we are known as a race statute. We have a race statute.
You're race to the courthouse.
First to the courthouse
yeah.
to record the deed. Those are unusual
yeah.
cases, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people deed a property to one person and then turn around and deed it also to another person? But this doesn't happen so much intentionally as maybe unintentionally.
Right.
The description is a little bit vague. The description is inclusive of property that we thought was deeded previously, but we're not sure. It's usually a description issue that then can create these race statute issues. But we record, we sign many deeds in our office every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And clients many times then ask as they walk out the door, now is that deed effective? Just like a will.
Right, right.
And the answer to the question is, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, the deed is legal. It is effective. You have, in fact, now conveyed your property. Then a week or so later, it may get recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Usually it is recorded in our office. But the effective date of the deed is back to the day that it was signed appropriately
right.
under notary.
Right.
That is the effective date of the deed. That's very, very different than necessarily the date of recording, which can be several days, a week, a month later, and in some files, if ever, recorded.
If a deed is not recorded, does
right.
that create a tax issue down the line? I mean, the property taxes and things like that?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, the tax department picks up, you know, the ownership, you know, based on the deed.
Recorded.
You know, when you have a proper deed, it's going to have that PIN number on it so they can follow that
mm-hmm.
and they can update their system so they know who to bill. So yeah, if you just have a deed that, you know, grandma conveyed to you and you put it in the drawer because that's what she told you to do, well, the tax office isn't going to know about it. So the bill's still going to go to grandma.
Yeah.
But, the advice in almost every situation as far as that goes would be that let's get that thing recorded.
Right.
Because what if grandma gives a deed to somebody else?
Yeah.
You know,
she forgets.
Really it's pure race and it doesn't matter what you know or whether you have notice about whether there was a previous deed or not. It's whoever gets that recorded first has superior title. So that's why, you know, when you do a real estate closing, you don't rely upon the title search that you did 3 or 4 weeks before in anticipation of the closing. You rely upon that, but you also update. Meaning before you record that deed, you look at the title to make sure nothing else got put on record,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, you know, deed of trust or whatever, so that you're sure that the title is clear. You know, the other, another thing, many things here, but another thing that I would mention would be that, If you have a gift deed, meaning a deed that's given without consideration,
right,
North Carolina requires that to be recorded within 2 years of its execution. So you can't hold on to this grandma deed for in perpetuity either.
Right.
You
know, okay.
You've got to record that in order for it to have any
effect.
But
only if it's been a gift.
Only if it's a gift.
A gift deed, yep.
That's 2 years. That's the exception to the rule that a deed does not have to be recorded.
Okay.
Generally.
But then sometimes you get into issues about, was it a gift? Did you give consideration for it? Did you not give consideration for it? You know, did you pay anything for it? You know, and then there, you know, a deed doesn't always say gift deed on its face. It might say quit claim deed, but that doesn't necessarily necessarily mean it's a gift deed. It could be that there was, you know, money actually paid for it. Maybe it's not a gift deed. So that's the kind of stuff that sometimes, you know, I've had maybe a handful of cases before where the deeds have gotten old and for some reason that they haven't been recorded. And then we get into an issue whether it was a gift deed or not.
Right.
You know, it happens.
So. Okay, more to come in a moment here with Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins. And if you'd like to participate in the show, you can give us a call.
Yes, give me a call at 800-818-2255. 247-7282 is the Moorhead City area number, and 353-4674 is the Jacksonville number.
The law is increasingly complex, and the growing staff of Harvell and Collins stands ready to untangle your legal challenges. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, along with associates Russell Alexander and Andrew Foster, practicing in all areas of civil practice, including estate planning, elder law and asset protection, collections and foreclosures, and also civil trial practice in these and all other civil matters. Call to arrange your free initial consultation at 252-726-9050. Plus, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins answer your questions live each Tuesday morning at 7:30 on Let's Talk Legal. Tune into Coastal Daybreak Tuesday mornings at 7:30 on the talk station and call in with your legal questions.
If an LLC has kind of a mixed bag of properties, commercial, residential, unimproved, at what point do you have too much within one LLC, and how do you then split them off into a second or a third LLC?
If it's your question, it's important to Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law here on the talk station. And what else do we want to talk about here today?
We've talked about Ben before, but let's review it again. Deeds that are where title is with the husband and the wife, spouses, that's a highly protected, if you will, type of ownership of property, ownership between spouses. And one of the protections which we mentioned earlier in the program to even today was the creditor protection. A creditor of the wife cannot go against the husband, or the husband's creditors cannot go against the wife usually when the property is held jointly between the two of them, tenants by entirety. Another result or consequence of tenants by entirety property is that the surviving spouse, by operation of law, inherits the property. Okay. If the property, on the other hand, is just in the name of the husband or just in the name of the wife and is not in both of their names, even though they happen to be married when one of them die, now we have a horse of a different color. We have the property basically passing according to the will or the intestacy, if you will, of the spouse that died. But if both names are on the deed, then, of course, it's tenants by entirety property, and it is a highly protected type of ownership. The other common type of deed is just simply deeds between two people, brothers, sisters, business partners, friends, neighbors, developers. And this many times is just, you know, John Doe and Robert Doe and Mark Doe, you know, and they just own the property, tenants in common. We want to talk about what that means a little bit as we move on into this next week. What does it mean to own property as tenants in common? Because there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. You really own the whole of the property, even though you might just own a third of it. You have control over all of it even though you only maybe own a third of it. That's an interesting twist there and hard to conceptualize for clients at times. But another very common type of ownership is just tenants in common ownership, which means that you own an undivided interest in the property. You own a fourth of it, a third of it, half of it, a fifth of it, whatever the case might be. You have an undivided interest in the whole. And yes, you have that percentage, and that's all that you have. And by the way, your spouse has to join in the out conveyance relative to that percentage again.
Yeah.
Okay, nothing has changed there. But the bottom line is that unlike owning property between spouses, which is tenants by entirety, you now own property between family members, business partners, et cetera, and this is known as a tenants in common ownership in property.
Mm-hmm. Now, for example, the kids all inherit the beach house. Is that typically how they end up owning it?
Then? It is. Yep. Yeah. It is.
So, because they would all own it, they all have access. You can't say, well, you know, Steve can't use the pool because he only owns a fifth, and that's the other side of the house. So,
that's correct.
So,
you can only use this corner.
Whole of the pool. Body of all comes into play under tenants in common property, and that would be a good subject for us to address.
All right, more to come next week on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Anytime you want to get that advice, the right advice at the right time, call on Harvell and Collins at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.